The First Thing is First Thing with Mike Parsons and Renee Vitale on 760 WJR and on the WJR app, where Michigan comes to talk.
Well, before we get into the cluster beep that L.A. has become, let's start with a little good news. Number one, it's Jason's birthday today. All right.
Happy birthday. That's all
Thank you so much.
I was hoping Jason would give himself the cheer sound effect because, dang it, you deserve it.
Yes, you do.
Celebrate yourself. Now, we were talking before the show. How absolutely lit would it be, and I don't use the L word lightly, to have your birthday on the final week of school?
Oh, man. You are living your best life when that happens.
I don't remember, like I said, I don't remember if I'm pretty sure it was on the last week of school. I mean, I always remember, you know, that last day of school, just all of us running out of there like our feet were on fire.
Right.
Now, I was thinking about this over the weekend, and looking back, I used to think, when I was a kid, I used to think Christmas was my favorite day of the year. But now looking back, if I could go back and get either one of those feelings back, I think I would choose the last day of school over anything else.
I think,
as an adult, having 2.5 months off of work while everyone else has 2.5 months off, so you won't fall behind or feel like you're playing catch up when you get back. I think I would take that over one day of presents.
Yeah, you're right. I had 2 days off last week. And it was because of a medical procedure. It kind of felt that Wednesday.
Right. We did have like a 2 week Christmas vacation, so that wasn't bad. But
that's
still,
true.
It's wintertime. Then again, when you're a kid, you can find something to do in the winter. You're not going to complain like you're an adult. You can go sledding or something.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, 2.5 months off in the summertime was great.
Oof.
Of course.
Oh, my God.
My favorite was coming back like when you were in junior high and over the summer. You got the boys that sprouted some facial hair, little sprouts above their lip. You're like, ooh, look at him. Yeah. He's a man.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for that to happen.
I was just going to say, I'm still waiting, too.
Jason and I are a couple of baby face. Well, happy birthday, Jason.
We save a lot of money on shaving cream and razors.
Yes.
That's true. I shave once a month, whether I need it or not.
My young boys here.
Yes. Well, and meanwhile, Ed the Zebra, who you may have seen in these viral videos running free in neighborhoods and along highways in Tennessee, has been rescued.
Yeah. And if you saw the videos of him running, that in itself was amazing. Just seeing him go through neighborhoods like there's a random zebra. But then the way that they captured him and brought him back is even more amazing. There's a video of him being airlifted. I believe it's by a helicopter. And the poor thing is in this like tarp wrapped up and he's spinning around in a circle.
Right. But how terrifying.
Right. And you see him in the air, but you can still see this expression on his face. Like, I have no regrets. I did what I did.
Right. Like if he could double freedom eagle us with his hooves, he would have.
Yeah. I love Ed. Ed is a treasure.
I do have to say, though, I'm glad they found Ed because there is video of him running through a neighborhood. There was a video of him running along a road in a pasture. And I thought he looked scared. And I thought, how terrifying does it have to be for Ed to just be dangling from whatever they had him suspended from with that helicopter
and doing that crazy spin.
Right. I mean, I would be throwing up and, you know, I guess zebras are legal to have as pets in Tennessee.
Okay.
Ed the zebra escaped his first day at a new home. And I said to myself, they can't send that zebra back to the place where he escaped from after one day. I mean, send him to a sanctuary or a zoo or somewhere, you know, but
yeah,
I get arrested or I get detained and I get the burrito wrap. I wasn't even being that.
He's already got his jail stripes on him. He was destined to be a baddie.
Right. He's already got the uniform.
Right.
So Ed the Zebra, I'm glad nothing happened to Ed, and I hope that he lives out the rest of his life in a free yet secure environment.
That's right.
All right, so 700 active duty Marines have been mobilized to Los Angeles, supposedly trained in de-escalation and crowd control. And another 2,000 National Guard troops have been authorized by President Trump. It looks like there was another night of tense clashes between National Guard and police and protesters who were protesting a raid over the weekend at a Home Depot in L.A. The state of California, Gavin Newsom, and the Attorney General Rob Bonta, they are suing the Trump administration for deploying the state's National Guard without their authorization. Now, this is the first round of National Guard deployments over the weekend. I don't know if there's going to be more lawsuits now that 700 Marines have been mobilized and another 2,000 National Guard troops, or if it's just all going to be part of the same lawsuit. But it seems like Donald Trump wrapped up his beef with Elon Musk just in time to start one with Gavin Newsom, along with Tom Homan. It's Trump and Homan versus Gavin Newsom in a new war of words here.
Celebrity boxing sounds like when that was a thing back in the day. But Trump has openly suggested that Newsom should be arrested. He made the remark after Newsom dared federal officials to detain him over his opposition, despite no evidence of really any wrongdoing by Newsom. Right. Trump speaking to reporters, he said, "I would do it if I were border czar Tom Homan. I think it's great." Newsom in turn fired back on social media, calling Trump's comments an unmistakable step towards authoritarianism. And then Governor Whitmer, she even joined in with other Democratic governors nationwide to condemn President Trump's actions in deploying the National Guard. She said that governors are the commanders in chief of their National Guard units and that the action by the federal government to activate them in their own borders without working with the state's governor is a dangerous move.
Yeah. And so I guess what happened, Tom Homan on Fox News said that they would arrest Governor Newsom or L.A. Mayor Karen Bass or anybody who gets in the way of them carrying out their immigration policies. Then Gavin Newsom was asked about it. And he's like, "Come on, tough guy. Come on, and arrest
come
me.
On. Yeah.
You want to get nuts?" And then so they asked the president about it, and he said that'd be great. And then Tom Homan later went on, maybe it was Fox News again, or another news organization, and said he wasn't talking about specifically arresting Gavin Newsom. His name just came up in the conversation. He was talking about anybody who tries to interfere with ICE. Well, and in the meantime,
that would be the governor's call.
Yeah. Well, apparently not. Oh. I mean, it seems like it. I mean, if it was his call, I guess he wouldn't be suing the Trump administration. But then you got friggin' Dr. Phil in the middle of all this. I guess he was embedded with ICE during these raids over the weekend, taping some stupid TV show. It's like, get Dr. Phil out of there.
It is pure chaos. You've got, you know, explosions, fires, Dr. Phil and his New Balances running around.
I mean, Dr. Phil, you've got no business here. This is obviously this has escalated into a very dangerous situation. And I know the Trump administration loves celebrities that love them. But I mean, could you imagine, you know, you're outside Home Depot and you're just trying to get a job for the day. And then not only does ICE roll up, but this doofus Dr. Phil gets out of the car. "Oh, what are you doing here in this country illegally?"
Right. We need that chick that was on his show. "Meet me outside. How about that?"
Yeah.
Dr. Phil, working for ICE now. You know, you never know.
Right. I mean, Dr. Phil, you're going to hurt yourself. Okay. Like, just, I mean, this whole thing is ridiculous to begin with. I mean, look, I'm on a rant now, but what the heck? Anybody who's looting, rioting, and setting police cars on fire should obviously be arrested. Anyone assaulting any law enforcement, whether it's ICE or the National Guard, should be arrested. However, I would say this. None of this would have happened if the Trump administration didn't carry out a raid on a bunch of day laborers outside of Home Depot in broad daylight on a Saturday. All right. Are you telling me those people are the worst of the worst? Those are the people that are a threat to our country. And then think about this. 9 o'clock, broad daylight, Saturday morning at Home Depot. Not only are you going to traumatize the people that you're deporting, There's a whole bunch of legal citizens who are probably seeing this and are being traumatized.
You got Bob and Nancy in line getting their hot dog.
Or imagine being a kid. How's that going to make you feel about the government growing up? Was it worth it? And again, there's no excusing the people causing destruction and violence. However, was an ICE raid justified on a Home Depot at 9 a.m. on a Saturday? I'm just asking. It's First Thing. Mike Parsons, Renee Vitale, WJR. And we are heading into JR morning. Jamie is out, so Chris Renwick and Lloyd Jackson join us. And Chris, you were not lying yesterday when you said just about everyone you know has a birthday in June. Obviously, yesterday was Jamie. Last week was Lloyd.
Yeah.
Renee's birthday is in a couple of weeks. And today is our very own Jason Fissler.
Hey! Happy birthday, Jace. Yay.
25, right, Jason?
Yes. Very exciting milestone birthday. Yes.
You can rent a car next year. Congratulations.
Mm-hmm. I'm off my parents' insurance. It's exciting time.
Nice. And you know what? I'm making the announcement. I am moving my birthday from August to June. Because,
yeah, I think you should. Yeah.
All the cool kids are doing
there
it.
There you go.
That's right.
Yeah. And now, you know, with the June birthdays, Lloyd, we were talking about this. How absolutely incredible it must have been as a kid to have your birthday in June and then you're out of school. Did either one of you get the shaft when it came to going around and passing out cupcakes, or did they make special arrangements for the summer birthdays?
I can remember my mom coming up and bringing cupcakes for the class. I had birthday parties too, man, I had birthday parties. We were still in school June 4th, yeah, that's my birthday, and we were still in school. I think we might have got out that following week, but I had birthday parties too.
Can I say, as a new stepmom to a young child, kids' birthday parties are so different.
Oh, they're outrageous.
Oh. It's insane. Yeah. When did you start giving gifts to the kids that come to the birthday party?
That's a relatively new development. Yeah. And Jake's birthday is the 20th. We're having his birthday party, sometime soon, next week, weekend. And gift bags,
yes.
That you used to give, like a gift bag,
you used to get like a bouncy ball
on
a top. It was a goodie bag.
Yeah, now it's not.
Yeah, yeah. All I'm going to say is thank God for Five Below. Make yourself a nice little gift bag.
Sure.
So take us through it, because it's been a while since I was a kid, and, I never got invited to a whole lot of birthday parties anyway.
Oh, Michael.
No, actually, I did, because my mom had a lot of friends.
He just had to say that because he said the true thing first.
Exactly.
And he had to come.
There you go.
But so what are you guys putting in these kids' goodie bags now?
Okay, so Jake's birthday is about, it's like video games, right?
Okay.
So my wife got these gift boxes that look like Nintendo Switches.
Oh, cool.
Inside the Nintendo Switch box is some candy. This thing she found on Amazon. They almost look like, remember Tamagotchis?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
These little screens, and there's like 50 games on it, like Tetris and whatever.
Wait, I want a com. I want one of those.
They're like, it's very pixelated. It's not good. It's not like high def. And then there's like a water bottle and like some other stuff in it.
Wow. Yeah, we did the we did the Harry Potter theme, so everybody got a whatever the owl is in Harry Potter, Squishmall, some candy, and a sorcerer's sword.
Yeah,
sword, whatever the heck that is.
Yeah, it's wild.
Yeah, wow. I that's a fairly new concept to me. Yeah. And at what age do I get to stop doing this?
Yeah, you don't. Acceptable? Here's the thing: is you don't.
You don't, because when they
in
turn
perpetuity,
18, when they
you
turn
just
18,
keep giving gifts.
I did sign up for this.
Yeah.
When they turn 16, then or when they get their own job, man. Yeah, I don't know. Like you said, Renee, that sounds sweet. I think I'm going to start crashing our staff's kids' birthday parties just for the goodie bags.
We'll do it as a group, so it's not weird.
There you go. There you go. Jason knows how to do it. That's
right. If just one of us shows up, it's going to be weird.
I'm this full-grown adult sitting amongst a bunch of kids playing Duck, Duck, Goose.
He's got his little birthday hat on.
The little water bottle and a piece of pizza.
Yeah.
Don't tempt me. JR Morning coming up. Just wanted to extend our condolences to our friends and colleagues over at WWJ News Radio 950 who unexpectedly lost one of their own over the weekend. Reporter Mike Campbell, at the age of 65. I never had the pleasure of meeting Mike, but in this business, we all listen to each other, and he was a hell of a reporter. Of course, everyone's talking about an incident that I remember very vividly back in 2019, when he was reporting on a missing 89-year-old woman. He actually found her.
Oh, wow.
While he was reporting, yeah, in Shelby Township. And it was the dead of winter, and it was cold, and he saved her life. And I remember, I'm like, wow, that's that's a heck of a story for your career.
Yeah, that's taking your career to the next level, that's for sure. And it seems like he was quite the adventurous. He loved boating, going to the UP, and just really lived life to the fullest. And a great storyteller, like you said, Mike. We all listen to each other, and you catch him on the air, and he just did a great job at his job. And yeah, that's terrible. Feel sorry for all those over there that I'm sure are dealing with such a loss.
Yeah, well, and, you know, Renee, if you're like us and you're lucky enough to be in this business in the same place for an extended amount of time, you start collecting friends at other stations, right? You
sure.
Either worked together in the past or you bump into each other. And, you know, even the competition, quote unquote. And like I said, I never met Mike, but I know a lot of good people over at said competition. And God, it's got to be so hard reporting on the sudden passing of someone that you work with every day and have gotten to know and become friends with over the past 30 years.
My extent of knowing Mike was we always made small talk over the donut box. Because I worked over there, not at WWJ, but at another station with that company. And on the weekends, somebody always had donuts. Hell, it could have been him that brought them in. I don't know.
Right.
I just knew there was donuts, and we'd make small talk about, Cottonwood's blowing around out there. You can eat that glazed one.
Well, and that's what everyone said. I mean, he obviously he was very busy. And he was very good at his job, but he always took the time to speak with everyone and make everyone feel valued. So, you know, Detroit radio is a little bit worse than it was a week ago when Mike Campbell was on the air. So we're thinking about them over there at News Radio 950. Meanwhile, quite a busy 24 hours in this saga in L.A. where protesters, the National Guard, ICE, and soon Marines have been clashing over raids by ICE.
Yeah, as we go into a fifth day, roughly 700 Marines have been mobilized to respond and will join the National Guard troops that were activated by Trump over the weekend without the consent of California's governor or the city's mayor. Governor Gavin Newsom called the action a serious breach of state sovereignty. In fact, California Attorney General Rob Bonta and Newsom have filed a lawsuit against President Trump and Defense Secretary Hegseth to prevent the federalization and deployment of the California National Guard. Now, California argues that Trump's actions violate the 10th Amendment and exceed federal power. Also, Trump has openly suggested that Newsom should be arrested. The president made the remark after Newsom dared federal officials to detain him over his opposition. And despite no evidence of wrongdoing by Newsom, Trump, speaking to reporters, said, "I would do it if I were border czar Tom Homan. I think it's great." Newsom, in turn, fired back on social media, calling Trump's comments an unmistakable step towards authoritarianism.
The LIV Golf Tour will be at St. John's Resort in Plymouth, August 22nd through the 24th. LIV Golf CEO Scott O'Neill, he was the keynote speaker at yesterday's Detroit Economic Club luncheon, and he talks to Bill Hobson from Michigan Golf Live, who is filling in for Paul W. Smith on Focus.
Scott O'Neill, who has a full night of rest, having arrived, I think, in Plymouth around 2 this morning after the LIV event in Virginia. How are you, sir?
Well, I couldn't be better. I mean, it's wonderful to see you, Bill, and to be here in Detroit, one of my favorite places in the world, quite frankly. Just getting a chance to walk the course this morning. It's my first time out here. Wow, it is magnificent. So August 22nd through the 24th, as you know, we'll be here with some of the biggest names in the world, Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson and Bubba Watson and Cam Smith, Nemo, Waco Neiman. I mean, it is going to be an absolute fun run.
Neiman is on a bit of a heater.
Well, you could say that.
He seems to be winning every time he tees it up. Golf fans are very interested in what's going to happen here in August. And several have asked me to ask you questions like, how did this all come about? How did How did the Cardinal become the venue for the LIV Tour Championship?
Well, Michigan is an incredible golf market, as you know much better than I do. This might not be too interesting to your listeners, but we use a pretty intense AI model to help us figure out and narrow down what the best markets in the world are for golf. And Michigan popped on the shelf pretty high. And this course is spectacular. You know, it's a new redesign, and you have this beautiful resort here. You know, obviously it's in the center of auto of the world, the auto world of the world, and that provides a wonderful, wonderful opportunity for us, we think.
I have no doubt that the property here will be flooded with fans who want to just come see what the whole thing is about, because I know it's a party atmosphere. I know that that's how it's presented. And at the same time, as you come into here for the first time, your players are playing for some fairly sizable prizes, right? This is the Tour Championship. This is the culmination of the season. What do you think of the course? You went out for a walk around today. We did a TV show here at the Cardinal a few weeks ago, and ever since then, the comments have been coming into us about how beautiful it is. Beauty, though, is not standing alone as a championship venue criteria. What'd you see out there that let you know this would hold up?
Yeah, you know, it's from what I have read and talked to some golf experts around. You probably know better than I do, but a pretty good course. I mean, it's a bit shorter than some of our guys are playing, so you've got to be a bit more precise. I think the Cam Smiths of the world and Patrick Reeds of the world will be well rewarded, you know, just because they're good. There's some bump and run opportunities, it looks like, here. So I think it's going to be wonderful golf. It's spectacularly beautiful. I think what makes great golf are great fans. And I've heard the Michigan golf fans are top flight. Interestingly enough, like two markets that are selling ridiculously well, one's Detroit and one's Indianapolis. And so I'm not sure if that should be a surprise or not, but compared to our other U.S. markets, those two are popping off the shelf, which is great.
Your friends at the PGA Tour, of course, have the Rocket Classic at the end of this month over at Detroit Golf Club, and that event has been fabulously supported by fans as well. Yeah. The first year they had it, they had to actually announce a sellout because they couldn't fit any more people on the property, and that continues to be a very popular event. If I say PGA Tour to you and I say LIV Golf to them, does the hair stand up on the back of your arms? Are these two bitter rivals right now in the world of men's professional golf?
You know, it's been quite different. I've been here for 5 months, and the first thing I said when I walked in is the good news is this isn't a holy war. We're just playing golf, you know, and I think so long as we stay, what we say, focus on the flag, that's our mission, and our mission is to get the greatest golfers in the world to travel to the four corners of the earth and grow the game of golf. And anybody that's interested in growing the game of golf and putting more clubs in kids' hands and exposing more people to this great game, we are supporters of and rooting for. And a couple of like fun examples, TGL, which isn't my cup of tea, which is the new kind of video game league based in Florida. I went to the opener. I was like, man, this is pretty. It's like it's not for me, but I think it'll attract more people to the game, and I think that's positive. I mean, for us, a third of our attendees, a third, have never been to a golf event before. How amazing is that? Our average age of our audience is 15 years younger than an average PGA event. So we have 25% of our audience are families. You'll literally see strollers at our events because the golf is fantastic and the stars are bright. The Bryson DeChambeaus of the world, they shine really bright. These Dustin Johnsons, I mean, you know who the stars are when they walk through the door for sure. But it's different. It's like there's a kids area, and there's a fan zone, and there's a concert, two amazing concerts, which we haven't announced yet, but keep your ears tuned. They're pretty special concerts. And it's fun. It's like a festival where golf is at the center. And I think, you know, in living our mission, which is to grow this game of golf, it's like we're going to have to do things differently. And I love my father-in-law. He's a wonderful guy. He's 77 years old. He's got the Golf Channel on 24 hours a day. He sits in his little study. That's not our core fan. He was with me in Virginia, so I can say that with love. He loved it, by the way. He's like, I've never seen anything like this before. I'm like, that's what most people say when they come to the event. I've never seen anything like this. This is incredible. There's never been one person that's come to our event that said, I'm really disappointed.
Yeah.
But it's different. There's music playing. There are DJs on the course.
Yeah, it's different. It's definitely fun. A party on the course, right?
Yes.
So it's not your traditional style of golf.
Right.
At the same time, both leaders of both tours – Commissioner Monahan and you have items that you're dealing with in your own worlds, including trying to get U.S. viewership numbers a little stronger in the television world. How do you go about that? Because so far they've not been where they need to be.
I don't know. I love where we are. I'll say, and everybody has a different perspective. But for us, you know, if you think about the PGA Tour as NASCAR, you think of us as Formula One. Okay. And NASCAR is a wonderful track circuit. I've been to NASCAR events. I know Jimmy Johnson. He's one of my BFFs. I actually love NASCAR. It, you know, the PGA's got 42 events in the U.S. and they're wonderful. And now they don't have all the, you know, the players get to pick and choose the 2022 events they play in. Ours is different. We're in Riyadh. We're in Australia. We're in Korea. We're in Singapore. We're in Hong Kong. We're in Mexico City. It's just different. And so to judge our ratings when we're on playing in Singapore and they're on at 2 in the morning on Fox Sports 1, I don't know. I'm happy to be judged, don't get me wrong. But I feel like the way we think about our ratings is we do about 2.5 to 3.5 million viewers per event globally. You know, we're broadcast in 900 million homes. We're in 120 countries. And don't get me wrong, I'm American. The U.S. is a major, major market. It's just we're playing a different game.
A judge ruled in favor of colleges paying athletes directly last week.
What does this mean for the future of college sports? Deb Schneider of Council to Fishman Stewart discusses it with Chris and Lloyd on JR Morning.
And after 119 years, the NCAA's amateurism model is officially over. A federal judge has given final approval to the landmark House versus NCAA antitrust settlement, clearing the way for schools to begin sharing millions of dollars with their athletes. And to help us unpack what this means legally and financially, we're joined by Deb Schneider of Council to Fishman Stewart. Deb, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And, you know, this has really been described as the most seismic change in the history of college sports. But before we get into the specifics, kind of briefly explain to our listeners what this case was about and why it took 5 years to resolve it.
Well, we've got to go all the way back to the beginnings of the NCAA and to unpack that. And that is that the NCAA has been built on amateurism and the idea that athletes are playing sports as an avocation, not as a way to make money or anything else. It was part of the educational process, not something in and of itself. And then there was an athlete who got hurt, and that was back in the 1950s, I believe. And his family filed for workers' comp, saying that he was an employee. Well, they came up with the idea that athletes are student athletes. So that has been the premise of the NCAA and athletes. In 5 years ago, basically, Greg House and Sedona Prince filed a lawsuit and said, wait a second, you've been making money off of us. And what happened was that lawsuit went up through the courts and ultimately was decided on June 21st of 2021 with a 9-0 decision from the Supreme Court, which said, yes, that's true. So now athletes are going to be able to profit off their name, image, likeness. In a lot of ways, that puts the athletes on equal par with any other student who was always able to profit off their name, image, likeness. But because athletes play such an oversized role in schools, in D1 schools in particular, men's football, men's basketball, in promoting the schools, this became a very big deal. So it's taken a long time to go up to the courts. It's taken a long time to have athletes that filed a lawsuit. It was all based on antitrust, and they won. Part of it is the Supreme Court we have. Part of it is the time. These states had tried to allowed students to profit off their name, image, likeness. California was the first. And so it was happening in the states, in the legislature. There are bills pending in Congress, and the court case came out first. I know that was an awful lot of answer to a question.
Well, but it's good context, because I think what you know, we talk about it a lot, how the landscape of college athletics has changed, and it changed drastically with NIL because there's basically no guardrails with it, right? It's the Wild West, and you have these collectives set up all around the country that that help fundraise for these student athletes. And we've seen, you know, kids not getting paid, kids being overpromised or what have you. But this is totally different. This is the actual institutions themselves having a budget to pay players. It feels like it's going to be a tough road to hoe, at least initially, when these universities are trying to figure out how to divvy up these payments. Who's in charge of figuring out how much each student or what sport gets the most money?
Well, that again is a very great question. So really, this is a lawsuit against the NCAA and the Power Five conferences, and that's the settlement. The parties agreed to $2.8 billion in damages to pay former college athletes. So there's that piece of this lawsuit. And that is divvied up, and they have a formula to divvy that up, with men's football and men's basketball and women's basketball getting the majority of the players based on use of former college athletes' NIL from 2016 moving forward. The bigger piece, and what we're really struggling with right now, is the second piece of that, which is allowing the universities, for the first time, universities are going to be actually paying their own athletes. And that's always been a no-no under the student athlete model. So now we're saying, how do we pay them? Who's in charge? It's been the collectives who have been doing the deals with the athletes. They are not the university. Now we're going to the university, which brings in a number of other problems. And part of it is that, what is fair market value? How does the university decide? Who do they pay? It's an idea of revenue sharing with up to $20.5 million per school for the first year. And I think the real answer to that is that it's going to be up to the schools to determine what they're going to pay. We also now have something called the College Sports Commission. Brian Seely was just named CEO of that, and they will be reviewing all these NIL deals.
How significant, Deb, is it that the NCAA itself won't be directly enforcing these NIL deals? I mean, what does that say about their evolving role or shrinking role in college sports governance?
I think the NCAA lost its power when these first antitrust lawsuits started to come out, and they struggled for the last 5 years in trying to provide guidance. And now the NCAA really doesn't have much to do with this. This College Sports Commission is going to be in charge of enforcement, and they're going to be reviewing the NCAA deals. There's something called NIL Go that's part of it. So I think the NCAA is really, realistically, a lot of this has to do with men's football, is really not going to be in charge of men's football anymore. And that is, yeah, as you put it, a seismic change in college sports.
Well, you know, I got one more thing. You know, we know most of the revenue, as you say, will go to football and men's basketball players. But could this lead to some Title IX concerns or some gender equity lawsuits down the road?
Oh, absolutely. And that's where this is so difficult. There are a number of schools of thought on that. And the first thing is Title IX requires equal opportunity for both genders or both sexes. The school is going to have to figure out how each school individually is going to figure out how they are going to share this revenue. So we know that certain sports drive the vast majority of television revenue. Basically, it's football and men's basketball. Women's basketball is up and coming. So there's a question. Do we get all the money? Do we pool it and provide it in equal bunches to equal revenue to each of the schools? We don't know how non-revenue producing schools sports are going to work in this, or we don't know how the Olympic sports or the women's sports. And once you start treating the men's and women's sports differently, you have a potential Title IX.